On this 29th day of August 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 3, Karma Yoga, text number 41.
Tasmat vam indriyanyadau.
Niyamya bharatarshabha.
Papmanam pratihihenam. Jnana vijnana nashanam.
Translation. Therefore, O Arjuna, best of the Bharatas, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sin, lust, by regulating the senses, and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. Purport. Excuse me. The Lord advised Arjuna to regulate the senses from the very beginning so that he could curb the greatest sinful enemy, lust, which destroys the urge for self-realization and specific knowledge of the self. Jnana refers to knowledge of self as distinguished from non-self, or in other words, knowledge that the spirit soul is not the body. Vijnana refers to specific knowledge of the spirit soul's constitutional position and his relationship to the Supreme Soul. It is explained thus in the Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.31. Jnanam padamaguyam me yad vijnana samanvitam sarahasyam tarangancha vahana gaditam maya. Then the knowledge of the Self and Supreme Self is very confidential and mysterious, but such knowledge and specific realization can be understood if explained with their various aspects by the Lord Himself. Bhagavad Gita gives us that general and specific knowledge of the Self. The living entities are parts and parcels of the Lord, and therefore they are simply meant to serve the Lord. This consciousness is called Krishna consciousness. So from the very beginning of life, one has to learn this Krishna consciousness, and thereby one may become fully Krishna conscious and act accordingly. Lust is only the perverted reflection of the love of God, which is natural for every living entity. But if one is educated in Krishna consciousness from the very beginning, that natural love of God cannot deteriorate into lust. When love of God deteriorates into lust, it is very difficult to return to the normal condition. Nonetheless, Krishna consciousness is so powerful that even a late beginner can become a lover of God by following the regulative principles of devotional service. So from any stage of life, or from the time of understanding its urgency, one can begin regulating the senses in Krishna consciousness, devotional service to the Lord, and turn the lust into love of Godhead, the highest perfectional stage of human life. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chokshu Unmiditam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So this is a very illuminating verse and purport, and this whole section I find to be very telling. So where have we come here? Now Arjun started with a question. Who remembers his question? Alec? Without looking. Who can say without looking? Yes, Bhishma.
It's God. Something to the extent of how does one act beyond his best intentions to?
Close, but kind of far away. Go ahead.
Right. He said, first you told me to.
No peeking.
First you told me to perform activities with intelligence, and then you also told me not to act simultaneously.
That's the beginning of the chapter.
Oh,
but I mean, just a few verses back that launched this whole section. This is the lust section. Bhishma knows now. Now
why,
you know.
Why is one forced to act?
Yeah, what is it that forces one to act as if against your will? Anichanna bivarshanaya. Balad even yojita. Balad means by force. You know, we know that anger, the answer is kamesha, krodesha, samojana, is that it's lust, it's kama, which is then transformed into wrath. They go hand in hand. Now, it's obvious, in the legal sense, that someone who's overwhelmed with anger will sometimes do things that they wouldn't ordinarily do, right? He was in a rage. He wasn't himself. You'll say he wasn't himself, right? Now, that also works for lust. People do things, that they later regret, for sure, you know. But the simple answer is that it's not just lust, you know, in the ordinary sense of sex desire, but material desire as a whole, you know, with all its unlimited variations, is what is impelling us in a direction that's against our own self-interest. That's the basic takeaway of this whole thing. Now, what is the effect of this lust? It's described that it covers your knowledge. This is the scary part. It's one thing if you knew what was going on, but the first thing that happens is that you're covered over. It's described that Maya, this is called the illusory energy of the Lord, has these two potencies, the covering potency and the throwing potency. The first one is the covering potency. Because we have to understand, this is like a basic understanding, that we are all originally Krishna conscious beings. Like those are the first, I think, words on the record album. You know, we're all originally Krishna conscious. But we've lost that. Now, what is the state of that Krishna? Well, it's complete illumination. Enlightenment. We start out enlightened. But we're not enlightened now. So what happened? Well, our knowledge was covered. Our consciousness was covered. Now, we can take it as the whole spectrum. Look at the lower animals and the insects. They're also living entities. That's the first lesson of Krishna consciousness, is that every living being is a combination of spirit and matter. And that spirit is this irreducible Atma, that soul. And it's the same in everyone, from Brahma down to the insignificant ant or amoeba. Wherever you see life, the soul is present. But clearly, there's different degrees of covering of consciousness. Right? Even in the human society, we can see that. Some people are just more intelligent, and most important, they're inquisitive into things like this, into their ultimate good. And some just couldn't care less. You know, as Krishna says very tellingly in the seventh chapter, Namam duskara no mudha, papadnyante naradama, maya pudita gyana asuram bhavamashita. Now, these are four classes of people who don't surrender to Krishna. Takes in practically everybody, right? and they're not mutually exclusive. You know, first of all, duskritana means that they may have some good quality. Maybe they're materially intelligent, but they use it for bad interests. And therefore, it's misused and it just gets them deeper and deeper entangled in the material energy. And they're fools, mudha. Out-and-out fools, you know, just, work, sex, you know, TV, football, you know, drugs. In other words, couldn't care less. It's just not on the board, the need for inquiring into these things. Fools and rascals. Naradama, the lowest of mankind. Now, clearly, these are not mutually exclusive, you know. Those who are in the pits, you know, they have no pious credits by which they can advance in life. And Maya Pratigyana, those who seem to be intelligent, university professorship, this and that, physics, but their real knowledge is stolen by illusion. And therefore, they're even in worse shape than the ordinary person on the street who may be a little interested, a little pious. But someone has firmly decided by logic and argument that there cannot be a God, right? And they have all the arguments to prove it. They have the books on the shelf, you know, the atheistic arguments. And just the out-and-out demons, the asuras. So all of them, every one of these persons who doesn't surrender to Krishna, and we were all counted amongst them, now we're trying to surrender, the real knowledge is covered by material desire, by lust. And because of the frustration that comes inevitably, because the material world is that way, it creates anger. And, you know, and that anger is a manifestation of the mode of ignorance. And this just gets you further and further entangled. So then he describes different degrees of the lust, right? Is that like the child in the womb, or the smoke and the fire covered by smoke, or the mirror covered by the dust? These are different degrees. The human being is like the fire covered by the smoke. You can see some light in there, but there's thick smoke and it's obscuring it. So there's a chance for us. The animals, the dogs and cats, they can't come to Bhagavad Gita class. You know, and even if they did, they probably wouldn't get much out of it. So that's an important idea. Then he goes on, avitam ganamaitena gyanaratavainita, that this eternal enemy known as lust covers the knowledge of the knower. We're known as the gyanina. We're the knower in this body. You remember 13th chapter? Chetragya. Who can say what that phrase means besides Arya? You know, Chetragya.
The knower of the field.
The knower of the field. In that case, the field is his body, you know. So we're the knower. We're always going to be the knower. You know, that's our constitutive position. Now, what we know and how much we know can be restricted or can become expanded according to how we act. But we're going to know, you know, we're eternally conscious beings. But it's covered. The more we engage in material activities, the more it becomes covered. Avritam Ganimit. So then he describes how that, this is now we're in text 40, yeah, the last verse, that how does it do it? How does lust do this? You know, this is our enemy, right? How does the enemy takes over the strategic positions, the senses, the mind, and the intelligence? Through them, lust covers the knowledge of the living entity. That's the last verse, you see? So therefore, now there's a therefore verse. So there's an action statement. You know, now we've analyzed the situation. We've diagnosed the problem. Now here's Krishna's prescription. In the beginning, you have to control the senses. Because the senses are going to drag the mind and the intelligence, you know, out into sense gratification. So there has to be some preliminary control of the senses. And in this way, conquer this sinful enemy, destroy of gyan and vigyan. Now let's read Proverbs purport and see how he... So, destroys the urge for self-realization. This is a very important point. Is that the most valuable thing we have is our urge for self-realization. If that's destroyed, then what are we going to do? We're like, well, we got all kinds of urges. Vacho vega manasa krodha vega. We have no lack of urges. But within all of those urges that are dragging us to hell, we have one little interest and urge for self-realization. We have to preserve that at all costs. If you engage in sense gratification, the first thing that happens is your urge for self-realization disappears. You know? It's diametrically opposite. It's opposite to your to self-realization. Or Krishna consciousness is your urge for sense gratification. As we were discussing this morning at our Coda class, I call it the reviewing, you know, this verse from which I finally learned after all these years, from the fourth chapter of Adi Lila, where Krishna's Kaviraj, he defines prema as in contrast to kama. We're in the kama section. It's perfect. Atmandriya priti vancha thare bali kam. Krishnandriya priti icha dare prem nam. This is a verse worth learning, or at least studying. So here's the contrast. He compares it like iron to gold. They're both metals, but they're in a world of difference, right? They have something in common. So similarly, prema and kama have something in common. They're the desire to please. Unfortunately, one is a desire to please your own senses, and the other is a desire to please Krishna's senses. That's the difference. The desires, and it's interesting, one is plural, one is singular. The desires to please one's own senses, because all kinds of senses in different varieties are always pulling you here and there, right? That's kama. Tare bali kama. That I declare to be kama. Krishna indriya priti vancha icha. The desire to please Krishna's senses, that's prema. The more that we desire to please Krishna's senses, the more we're actually achieving prema. That's what it's all about. Now, we don't know how to do that, so we need an intervener. We need the shastra, we need the guru, we need instructors. We have no idea, you know. We can imagine, but we shouldn't imagine. We should actually get the real thing. Were you going to ask something? Yeah.
You were saying that kama here is pluralized?
The desires, yeah, ivancha, the desires to please one's own senses. Atmendriya priti. Priti means to please one's senses. That's plural, you know, because there's so many senses. And each one can have so many different desires at different times of your life or times of the day. You know, so there's all kinds. But the central desire to please Krishna's senses, which is interesting because it means, okay, that desire is central. And it can be expressed in so many different ways. Right?
Shouldn't the other one be plural too?
No, because the point is, it's a different point he's making. In other words, the central fact of a real devotee's life is that he wants to please Krishna. You know, so that may be expressed in so many different ways. You know, but it's kind of bahu shaka in antastra. You know, in other words, there's so many different branches of sense gratification, but there's really one central point in Krishna consciousness, and that's why it's so harmonious. In other words, the gopis and the cows and the cowherd boys—they're all friends. They all love each other because Krishna's in the center. But in the material world, everyone's got his own different sense gratifications he's trying to achieve, and there's clash. There's so much, because there's no harmony there. There's no central point. Anyway, that's the verse. That's like a central idea or understanding of Krishna consciousness. You know, when we desire to please our own senses, we're in Maya. That's we're under the sway of lust, which is nothing but pure love of God transformed by contact with the material energy, the modes of nature. It's that same pleasure energy, that Ladini Shakti, that is such a source of pleasure for Krishna and for his devotees when it's directed to Krishna. But that same Ladini Shakti, in contact with the material energy, the modes of nature, turns into the source of the greatest suffering. In the fifth chapter, Krishna will say that those pleasure that you get, which is from lusty activities, is the source of your misery. It has a beginning and an end. And wise do not take part there. So, therefore, in the beginning, one has to control the senses. Now, clearly, after millions of births of uncontrolled senses, we can't do it automatically or right off the bat. But there's a program, there's a strategy to link the senses to Krishna and in this way control them. It's not a question of stopping sense activities. It's a question of redirecting them. Just like there's so many millions and billions of books in this world, but we're reading this one book, right? And other books like it. So reading is there, right? Understanding is there, but the result is completely different. We're not reading for sense pleasure, we're reading to understand and to please Krishna, and we're connected to Krishna. Same thing with eating and seeing and doing all the other senses. So, what is that? Adakshi Krishna namadi nabave grayam indriyai sevan mukhi jivado svayam eva smaratida. With these present senses, saturated as they are with material desire, we cannot understand, we cannot perceive the real nature of the name, form, qualities of Krishna. Atakshi Krishna Namadi. Namadi means name, form, qualities, etc. Let's think of these. Uh-oh. Rat?
There's a rat behind Prabhupada.
Oh, God. You have to chase him out. Chase him out. Because of all of those flowers on there. Hare Krishna. So, Atakshi Krishna Namadi. So the senses, we cannot perceive Krishna as he is. In our present state. But if one begins serving Krishna with the senses, beginning with the tongue, chanting and hearing and tasting prasad, then eventually with purified senses, Krishna will eventually reveal himself to us. This is vijnana. That's the idea. So, Prabhupada distinguished between jnana and vijnana. He keeps talking about scientific knowledge. You know, vijnana generally refers, when he talks about science, he means direct perception. You know, what you can perceive. So gyan, we can have so much gyan, we can have so much understanding of the philosophy, but by practicing the principles of devotional service, we get scientific knowledge. It means Krishna gradually or sometimes suddenly reveals himself to us. And then there's no question. There's your faith has been rewarded with realization. So that's the difference between gyan and vijnana, the specific knowledge of the conscious position and his relation to Krishna. So that's revealed who you actually are in the spiritual world, ultimately. That's ultimate vijnana, yeah.
Oh, I have a question. Do you have to have gyan to get vijnan?
Generally.
Can you get vijnan without, say if you don't have any gyan, can you get vijnan? Is
that
possible?
Krishna is completely independent. He can reveal himself to anybody. So that, you know, cultivating the science of Krishna consciousness is not always necessary. I'm just reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita, how Lord Chaitanya would bestow love of God, you know, on people by the thousands, just by them seeing him, just by them seeing him in ecstasy, by hearing his holy name. So where's the gyan? They pass, you know, straight through the gyan into vigyan. So it can happen like that. But generally speaking, you require a foundation of knowledge, which will increase your faith and give you information how to act, what to do, what not to do. That's knowledge. When you actually do it and you begin to experience the results, that's vigyan. You see what I'm saying? Okay. Now here he quotes from Bhagavatam. This is Krishna speaking to Brahma. Just before the Chatur Shloki, there's four essential verses of the Bhagavatam in this chapter 9, and Krishna reveals himself to Brahma as the Supreme Personality of God. Just like in this Bhagavad Gita, there's also four essential verses, 10, 8, 9, 10, and 11. And the first one is the same thing. He reveals himself to be, he declares, Aham Sarvasya Prabhava. Everything has come from me. I'm producer of everything. So here, Krishna is speaking to Brahma and saying that this is the supreme secret, very confidential, mysterious. And that's what's being taught here in the Bhagavad Gita as well. So Prabhupada, from the beginning of life, once you study this, you know, as Prahlad says, Komara Achare Pragyo Dharma Bhagavataniya, that from a young age, Komara, one should study Bhagavad Dharma. Well, I don't know about any of you, but I didn't study from the beginning of life. So he says it's very difficult to turn lust back into love of God, but even a late beginner can do it. When love of God deteriorates into lust, as it has for us, it is very difficult to return to the normal condition. Nonetheless, Krishna consciousness is so powerful that even a late beginner can become a lover of God by following the regular principles of devotional service. So from any stage of life, or from the point of understanding its urgency, so that's more or less where we're at. This is a key element, to understand the urgency. Remember that verse? I think you know this one. Labdva sudurlabha midam bahu sambhamande manu shamarta damanichyam abhiya dhira. One has to be dhira. That comes up right in the beginning of Gita. You know, just to understand transmigration, not to be disturbed at the time of death, you have to be dhira. Right? You have to be, dhira means patient and sober-minded and self-controlled. So in this verse, Krishna speaks, I think in the Bhagavatam 11th canto, having attained the human form of life after many, many births. You know? I mean, we understand that. We haven't realized it. I don't know about you, but I don't know any of my past births. But we believe it, right? We've been through many, many births, and we've attained this human form of life. Now, what is this human form of life? Well, like every other human form, it's temporary, that's for sure. We're all going to die, right? But it has a very good quality, artadam. Artadam means giving the ultimate value. In this case, swarta, swa-arta, the need of the soul, not the body, because arta often just means money. You know, people want wealth and this and that, that's all arta. You know, but swarta means the need or the value for the soul. So that's what's referred to. But so one has to be sober-minded because the clock is ticking. We're also going to die just like the cats and dogs. And if we don't inquire into these things and we just live for the senses, then agayor indriyaramo mogam partasajivati. One who lives a sinful life of sense gratification lives uselessly. That's right there in second chapter? No, it's right in this chapter. So, the second part of this verse is turnam yateta. One should quickly strive. In other words, don't waste any time. The whole disease of the conditioned soul is to waste time. We waste the time, waste the human life. So as devotees, we shouldn't waste time. Napateta no mrityayava, because after all, this body can die at any time. Anu mrityayava means it's following death, or death is following behind us at any time. You know, so as long as that hasn't happened, we're still alive, and we have our senses about us, then strive for the ultimate good, nikshreyasa, the ultimate good, which is liberation from birth and death, return back to Godhead, prema, as we say every morning, right? The ultimate goal of life, prema. ten offenses, right? But we have to take it seriously. So the key element that I wanted to bring out is this without delay. Because Prabhupada says, understanding the urgency of the matter. Or from the time of understanding, one can begin regulating the senses. So it begins, the first sense to regulate this, the tongue and the ear. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Right? And that's the real sadhana. Fighting the mind and fixing the mind on the sound. Listening, listening, listening. That's the senses. The first sense we have to control. And it's so powerful. This is a special benediction for this age. Lord Chaitanya has made it possible for us to be yogis. You know? This sixth chapter, you'll see. You know? It's so difficult to be a yogi. Arjuna rejected it. I can't go out into the forest and do pranayama and control the mind. It's like trying to control the wind. They just mobilized billions of dollars, you know, because some hurricane is coming up the East Coast. You know, can't control it. Got to try to defend against it, you know, roll with a bunch. So that's like the mind is trying to control it. So, but, Lord Chaitanya, who's Krishna himself, has given this process of chanting, both in japa and in kirtan, as a way of controlling the mind, purifying the senses, engaging, and going back to God, and transforming or sublimating lust into love. That's exactly what's being mentioned. Okay, any questions on text 41? Yes, Prabhu.
So you mentioned that you can't perceive Krishna with material senses.
Mm-hmm.
But so then what did, when Krishna was personally present on the earth, what were all the non-devotees seeing?
They could see, but they didn't see him as Krishna. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, people come into this temple, or what do they see? You know, if someone wanders into the temple, they'll see statues. I mean, I was told that there was an instance where people, they would come and they didn't see the deity at all. They just saw the flowers. You know, or like take it for the, I'll think of this example. You know, a bug is crawling across the floor, right? We have so many bugs coming here. So they're in the temple, we're in the temple, but are they really seeing what we're seeing? Are they perceiving what we're perceiving? To them, it's just like, oh, that's the great white plain, you know, before you get to the lake over there, you know, whatever, you know. Or like in their own body, you know, some, you know, what do they know? That there's a person there. Oh, this is the forest, you know, he's got his chest hair or something, and there's the, they don't even know there's a person there, you know. But we know there's a person. So it all depends on the state of consciousness. In fact, Krishna says, Naham Prakasha Service, and nobody, you know, I remain hidden from all. You know, I do not reveal myself. So what does it mean? Prabhupada says, how could that be true? Because he was visible to everybody. But they didn't see him as the Supreme Personality of God. And therefore, it can't really be said that they understood. So that's you know, it's like, I mean, we can experience it even in our own neophyte stage, that when you're a little Krishna conscious, Or you do some service, you know, for a little while, and then you come before the deity, they look different. You know, they're smiling more, or, you know, you feel more presence there, you know, isn't it? I mean, it's like that. And then if you're in Maya, you did some nonsense, and then, yeah. I mean, I remember, I'll never forget this. I worked with this devotee. This was a devotee I worked with on the Back to God in magazine, 1975. It was the time of the big marathon, 17 books in 2 months, you know. So I was actually taken off the books and put on the BTG so that Jai Advaita Swami could edit the books. So it was basically us two, this devotee Jagannath Sutta, who had been a very responsible devotee from in Brooklyn, but, you know, he was a couple of years more in the movement than I was, very intelligent guy. So he was the editor, and I was the second editor or whatever. He was the editor-in-chief. And we started putting out the magazine. A few other guys joined us, you know. So time went on, and eventually he kind of went off. He had some problem in his devotional life, you know. Happens. And I remember seeing him. He, you know, it used to be a big crowd in Mangalartik, you know. I mean, it's still a crowd, but it was like filled. The temple was filled. And I was, you know, in my spot. I wasn't right up front, but I was near the front. And I saw, and he was up front, and he couldn't look at the deities. He could not look at those deities, looking this way and that way, this way and that way, because he had done some real nonsense, you know. And that'll happen, you know, where you can't even look at the deities. And you find, you know, if you fall away from devotion, that somehow or other, you know, the first thing that goes is Mangalarti, you know, because it's an austerity, get up. Well, Mangalarti is really when you come and the deity sees you, and you see the deity for the first time, and it's very auspicious. You know, just to come from Mangalartik and to chant those prayers, those Guru Vashtaka prayers, especially if you understand what they mean, which I always emphasize, it's a tremendously auspicious time. And then, you know, everything goes forward, and you have that nice period for japa. It's very healing and important. But it's a blessing. Just the inspiration to do that, the will to do that on a regular basis, is coming from Krishna. It's a gift. And when that, and you can see, you know, how many can actually do that for a long period of time? A handful. You may come sometime and leave, You know. So we should always remember that you know, Krishna's giving us this inspiration to become more inspired, to do those things which will fix us in devotional service. And if you feel yourself, you know, getting tempted to not be regulated, then that's an alarm. You know, got to get myself fixed up. Do, you know, become regulated, and you'll see that devotion has a nice a foundation. That's your foundation for your devotional service. Yes, Prabhu.
I had another question. We're at the end, or like by the end of the chapter, Karma Yoga, and I think it just, I missed it, but I don't understand what Karma Yoga even is.
Karma Yoga is quite simple, actually. Karma Yoga involves working in the mood of sacrifice, you know, giving over the fruits as much as possible to the Lord, or even here is mentioned for the demigods, you know, and in the mood of sacrifice, that you're not trying to enjoy the fruits of your activity. Because karma, in its broadest sense, means activity that produces some fruit that you want, right? Now, there's different kinds of karma. There's vikarma, which is sinful activity right off the bat. There's no question of giving off the fruit in that case. But karma, as engaged in according to the rules and regulations of the Vedas, There are all kinds of ways in which you can perform sacrifice. Now, you know, that may be just for going to the heavenly planets or whatnot. But of course, throughout this chapter, Prabhupada gives the commentary that, oh, it's for Krishna. The famous verse in ninth verse here, Yagyartar Kamanon Yatra Loko Yom Karma Vandana. Yagya is another name for Vishnu. So work has to be performed as a sacrifice of Vishnu. Otherwise, that work binds one to this world. So this chapter emphasizes the principle of using the senses, working. You know, you have to do something. He says at the beginning, you can't just do nothing. You can for even a moment. Even if you're just sitting there silent, your mind is going a mile a minute. That's doing. You know. So karma yoga, simply put, is, you know, some we're also doing karma yoga. Bhakti yoga includes karma yoga. But the thing with karma yoga is that you're not always thinking of Krishna necessarily. You see? Someone's working a job out there, he's not thinking of Krishna. But when the time comes and he gets the food, he says, oh, I have to give a percentage to the temple. You know, I should buy some curtains for the temple. I should do, you know. So that's karma yoga. Now, there's aspects, you know, that can become bhakti yoga. The more that one is serious about thinking of Krishna while you work and while you act. So it's not just, completely compartmentalized. You understand? But karma yoga emphasizes the activities of the senses. And that's why we have here this whole thing at the end. What forces one to do something? Action. Seemingly against one's best interests. You see? So you're dealing with the basic ontological position of the soul, a conditioned soul, who wants to become unconditioned, but is having trouble because he's being controlled by the senses, by the lust. So that's what karma yoga is all about. And the basic word that goes with the karma yoga is jagya, sacrifice. Don't just become greedy for the fruits. Then you're going to be bound up by that. Karma jambuddha yuktahi palam chakvamanishin. This is from the last chapter, which is a summary of this. That those who are intelligent, they give the fruits over, the fruits of their action away for Krishna. And in this way, they become free from bondage and go back to Godhead. So in one sense, you can see the whole, you know, what we're doing is karma yoga. But we're trying to remember Krishna more and more as we do it, and therefore it becomes bhakti. You know, when you're actually doing it out of love, not just out of duty. Oh, I have to give my tenth, my tithe. You know, no, that's karma yoga. But if you really, you know, want to give it as an act of devotion, then that's bhakti yoga. You see what I'm saying? We'll go over it more. You were going to say, are you?
Well, I was just wondering,
if it's accurate to say that when you accrue highest credits, and then it seems that the form of reward that you get is something that might be sinful, like you can enjoy unlimited sexual activity on some heavenly planets, or like what would seem to be.
Well, the pious credits is not going to lead you to sin generally. What, you know, if you go to the heavenly planet, then that's you're enjoying there, but it's not sin. You're just going to cash in your credit card, you know. When you come, but it's not back to Godhead. You're still conditioned, and when you come back down here, as Krishna describes in the ninth chapter, you haven't really made any progress. And from at that point, from bad association, you can definitely get into sinful life. See, there's different kinds of piety. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there's a bhaktyunmukhi sukriti. Sukriti is like what we know on Ajnana. What is it? Ajnana Sukriti. You know, unknowing devotion service. Agyata Sukriti. So that's the kind of pious activity that awakens bhakti. That's also considered. It's like the friends of Krishna. This famous verse, Krita Punya Punja. That they're the same person who is known as the impersonal Brahman to the Mayava, to the impersonalists, who is known as the supreme master to the dasya bhaktas, and who is known as just an ordinary human being to the fools. these friends, they're playing with them on an equal level. Why? Krita punya punja, because they've amassed all of these pious credits. Punya, but what kind of punya? Not the kind of punya that'll take you to heaven. The kind of bhakti punya, you know, like punya shravana kirtana. You know, this is in that verse. Just by hearing about Krishna, you get punya. But clearly, it's the kind of punya or pious credits that will bring you closer to Krishna. So there's some piety when you engage in fruitive activities under rules and regulations from the Vedas. There's part of the Vedas, karmakanda. That will give you good birth, or give you higher planets, or give you this. But Krishna condemns that in chapter 2. You remember that? For the flowery words of the Vedas. They say that's all there is. You know, and they perform all these, you know, incredible sacrifices, good birth, higher planets, you know. But he roundly condemns that. So we're not after that kind of punya. You know, that really, as you say, it keeps you bound. See, it's the bars of gold, you know. It's not going to lead you towards sin, not directly anyway. But it'll keep you in this world, and from there you could go down to the worm and stool, you know, if you're not careful. So, no, we're after doing those activities that awaken bhakti. That's real piety, you know. Okay, should we do one more? Yeah, go ahead.
What's the difference between the karma yoga mentioned in chapter 3 and the one mentioned in chapter 5?
An increase in knowledge. If you know, karma yoga, when you become more and more knowledgeable, then you're not interested, you know, in some material fruit, even the piety. And the sacrifice culminates in knowledge. Remember that thing where the sacrifice in knowledge is so much better? Mm-hmm. You know. So, and in 5, it's all about Brahman. You know, it's all about Brahma yoga, realizing Brahma. And we know the supreme Brahma is Krishna, ultimately. And at the end of the chapter, Krishna makes it clear, you know, Bhoktaram Yagatabhasam, that really I'm the result of this karma. There's a combination there. If you read chapter 5, you see there's all of this knowledge. He knows, you know, that the senses are working. It's just the senses working. I'm not really doing anything, you know. That's not present in chapter 3. You know, he's very much involved in the sense activity. But especially the early parts of the chapter, okay, we'll give the fruits over. Don't get entangled with the fruits. So when karma yoga becomes more full of knowledge, it becomes more jnana yoga-ish. And when jnana becomes more fixed on meditation or remembering Krishna, it becomes bhakti yoga ultimately. Yeah.
I find that real interesting because chapter 4 is transcendental knowledge, so it's like crossing the
barrier. Yeah, yeah.
But also, I wanted to ask you, it seems like, well, we read in the purport of chapter 7.1 that Prabhupada says the first 6 chapters are sort of gradually bringing you from karma yoga to bhakti yoga.
Right.
And the middle section is devotional service, right. And then the end is jnana yoga, the bhakti yoga, something like that.
Yeah.
So my question is, it seems like chapter 6 is a lot about jnana type stuff. And can you explain how chapter 6 is actually like a coming out of the concept of karma yoga?
Chapter 6?
Yeah.
Well, chapter 6 is dhyana. That's the meditative chapter.
Yeah. So is it accurate, though, that... Because he says... I don't know if it's Prabhupada said it in that purport, but the first 6 chapters are supposed to be about the gradual elevation from karma yoga to bhakti yoga.
You go through jnana and dhyana, you know, because the 5th chapter you'll read near the end there, it's practically a little intro to the 6th chapter about, you know, meditating, keeping the eyes, you know, the prana between the eyebrows and everything. It's right there in the 5th chapter also. So, the 6th chapter, there's a lot of important instructions in the 6th chapter. But the technique, you know, for fixing the mind is ultimately impractical. The mind has to be fixed. And I love that section of 20 to 23 where he describes samadhi. And Prabhupada describes it so nicely in the purport in terms of, you know, Krishna consciousness. But, you know, you want to come to that point of endless happiness experienced through transcendental senses, atindriyam, you know, buddhi grahyam atindriyam. And coming to the point where once you attain it, you'll think there's no greater gain. Well, that has to be Krishna consciousness. Right? It's not some impersonal meditation or even the super soul meditation. But this chapter 6 is not going to get you there, not for the vast majority. It's too difficult. So chapter 7 gives you the practical way, begin to give you the practical way, how even we can, you know, turn the mind in such a way that it'll be naturally attracted to Krishna. Maya sakta mana parta. It's so illuminating. All right, so we have just a few minutes. Let's see. All right, why don't we do 42, and then we'll end tomorrow with 43. Indriyani paranyahu.
Indriyani paranyahu.
Indriyebhyak parang manaha.
Indriyebhyak parang manaha.
Manasastu parabuddhir.
Manasastu parabuddhir.
Yo buddhe paratastu saha.
Yo buddhe paratastu saha.
The working senses are superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than the senses. Intelligence is still higher than the mind, and he, the soul, is even higher than the intelligence. Purport. The senses are different outlets for the activities of lust. Lust is reserved within the body, but it is given vent through the senses. Therefore, the senses are superior to the body as a whole. These outlets are not in use when there is superior consciousness or Krishna consciousness. In Krishna consciousness, the soul makes direct connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the hierarchy of bodily functions as described here ultimately ends in the Supreme Soul. Bodily action means the functions of the senses, and stopping the senses means stopping all bodily actions. But since the mind is active, then even though the body may be silent and at rest, the mind will act, as it does during dreaming. But above the mind is the determination of the intelligence, and above the intelligence is the soul proper. If, therefore, the soul is directly engaged with the Supreme, naturally all other subordinates, namely intelligence, mind, and senses, will be automatically engaged. In the Katha Upanishad, there is a similar passage in which it is said that the objects of sense gratification are superior to the senses, and mind is superior to the sense objects. If, therefore, the mind is directly engaged in the service of the Lord constantly, then there is no chance that the senses will become engaged in other ways. This mental attitude has already been explained. Param drishtva navartate. If the mind is engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord, there is no chance of its being engaged in the lower propensities. In the Katha Upanishad, the soul has been described as Mahan, the great. Therefore, the soul is above all, namely the sense objects, the senses, the mind, and the intelligence. Therefore, directly understanding the constitutional position of the soul is the solution of the whole problem. With intelligence, one has to seek out the constitutional position of the soul and then engage the mind always in Krishna consciousness. That solves the whole problem. A neophyte spiritualist is generally advised to keep aloof from the object of the senses. But aside from that, one has to strengthen the mind by use of intelligence. If by intelligence one engages one's mind in Krishna consciousness by complete surrender under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then automatically the mind becomes stronger, and even though the senses are very strong, like serpents, they will be no more effective than serpents with broken fangs. But even though the soul is the master of intelligence and mind, and the senses also, still, unless it is strengthened by association with Krishna in Krishna consciousness, there is every chance of falling down due to the agitated mind. So we don't really have time to do this justice. now, so I'm going to do this verse tomorrow also. But this verse, I always thought was just like, you know, getting more and more illuminating. You can just see the hierarchy, right? You got the super soul, the soul, the intelligence, the mind, the senses, and the sense objects. Now, when the senses are being controlled by the sense objects, then the mind is being dragged. The intelligence department is just figuring out ways to increase the sense gratification. And the poor soul is riding along on this chariot of the body being victimized. And the super soul is watching it all and you're completely detached. So we need to come in contact with the instructions of the super soul. We can't do that directly, so we need to do it indirectly through the Shastra and through the spiritual master. And this is, there's another nice verse which we'll quote tomorrow from Uddhava, how he describes the mercy of the Lord, that he makes himself accessible in this way. You know, because we can't hear the super soul, we're too covered over. And birth after birth, after millions of births, he's still there, but we can't hear him. So he intervenes by the means of the great devotees, you know, who are clear, who are, if you will, channeling the super soul. What else is it, you know? And the books, this is the super soul here in book form. Krishna's speaking to us here. If we can hear enough, and we can begin to get the clue and act on it, then we can start to reverse this upside down business where the sense objects are dragging us down, you know, and actually control the lower self by the higher self because we're allowing the super self to control us. This is actually what Krishna consciousness intelligence is all about. And the more you do it, the more intelligent you become. You know, Krishna is giving you that intelligence. Famous verse: Teisham Satati Yuktana. To those who are always devoted to me and serving me with love, I give the intelligence by which they can come to me. Within the heart, he says in the next verse, super soul. Okay, so we'll continue discussing these things tomorrow. Thank you for your intelligence. All glory to Shri Prabhupada. I mean, thank you for your attention.